The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio. It's Paul Chapman here with Ed Willis for our last version of 2018. How are you doing, Ed?
Good. I think still 2017, though. I'm pretty sure.
Well, this will probably bleed into 2018, and let's hope that it's not the last one. Yes, the last one of the year.
It's incredibly optimistic on your part, thinking we will be around in 2018.
Yeah, it is. I have year-end stuff on the brain, so to speak. So thank you for listening. This podcast, as usual, is brought to you by Lazy Boy Vancouver. They have four great locations. They have lent us their furniture all year to make us comfortable. They have sponsored our content. Thank you to Lazy Boy North Vancouver, Coquitlam, Langley, and Maple Ridge. Go check out their stores. We will probably be doing one of these podcasts from a Lazy Boy store as we get into the NFL playoffs. So as they are the big NFL sponsor, Ed, let's start with the NFL. Now, I know, you know, you went down to Seattle for the game against the Eagles because we saw that as a significant game. Prime time, you know, do the Seahawks still have a shot? And by God, they came through. We did the same thing when they played the Rams, and it was a completely different result. What was the difference between those two teams?
Oh, it was night and day, and you can't emphasize that enough. It was shocking. It just, I mean, like, I've been going down to Seattle really since like the start of the Wilson, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll era. And I've sort of developed almost this superstitious belief in their ability to rise to the occasion at home in big time games, just seen it over and over and over again, no matter what the circumstances are. So for them to not only lose, but to just get demolished in every phase of the game, at every position, was shocking. And then to look in the stands in the last 5 minutes and see it maybe 1/10 full, because, you know, the atmosphere games in Seattle is so singular, and that building is so energized. And to see that all the life sucked out of that building was really quite remarkable.
So we can debate whether or not the Seahawks window is closed. Can they reload? They get healthy, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, one of the questions I have about the Seahawks is the coaching style. Now, Pete Carroll, when everything's going great, is this relaxed players coach, let them be individuals, everyone can do what they want to do. I found it pretty distressing, not just after the game, but through the week, is this tension with two of their bigger stars. And that's, you know, Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas. And Earl Thomas made the comment to a reporter that Bobby Wagner probably shouldn't have played, fighting through an injury. And Bobby Wagner fires back, tells him not to say anything. And then even later in the week, reporters go to Bobby Wagner. He says, "Oh no, Earl and I talked. We're good. We straightened it out." And then people go to Earl Thomas, goes, "I haven't talked to Bobby, but I don't care." Is this team really in danger under Pete Carroll of kind of exploding a little bit? Because to see two established stars on defense in that kind of a situation is not good.
Well, okay. Well, let's go back again, because, you know, there have been volatile personalities on this team going right back to the beginning. But when they were winning, it was kind of viewed as colorful, as part of the personality and the character of this team. And that was part of Carroll's genius, as he was able to balance all these different personality types. I thought it started to turn last year. It just got a little more edgy, a little more. And, you know,
and then there was the offseason stuff where Sherman basically said he was still mad at Wilson and the offense over the Super Bowl they lost to the Patriots. Like, come on, dude, get over it.
No, there was, but there were also incidents toward the tail end of last season with, you know, Sherman threatening to revoke a reporter's credentials, and there was a scene after the loss in Atlanta, Michael Bennett threatening a reporter for absolutely nothing. It was just kind of crazy stuff. So when you add all that up and then see what's taken place this year, it does seem to be indicative of a team that's unraveling. And I think that's why you're going to see a major, major makeover in this Seahawks team in the offseason. I can't for the life of me see Richard Sherman coming back. I think Cam Chancellor's done. I think Cliff Averill's done. And I don't think they bring Jimmy Graham back. They've just invested too much money in that tight end position. So I think what you're going to see is you've got the building piece on defense with Bobby Wagner. You've got the building piece on offense with Russell Wilson. And I think you're going to see a dramatic change in the supporting cast around those two.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because there is a bit of a changing of the guard there. Obviously, we got to talk about the Rams, because that was a demolition. And while the Seahawks had looked, even in some of their wins this year, mediocre, Ed, they, you know, when they beat the Rams in LA, it was sort of like, oh no, there's still the guys that own this division until further notice. Well, further notice arrived on Sunday. Do you see the Rams being able to actually do something in the playoffs?
That, well, obviously based on that, you'd say yes. And based on their record and, you know, based on the personnel they have, you'd think so. I think we're selling Minnesota a little short right now, you know, especially because, you know, that beatdown is the Rams beatdown of the Seahawks is fresh in everybody's mind. Are they that good? I don't think so. I think it was just one of those magic afternoons where everything went right for them. And the fact that they did it with Jared Goff throwing for 120 yards, and I think he had one completion over 15 the whole game, is absolutely amazing. So we'll see. For me, the NFC is still wide open. There's still about four or five teams that have a legitimate claim on the conference. So we'll just see where we go from there. And I'm sorry, I still like Mini. They've been doing it so quietly and flying so far under the radar. I think people have to start taking them seriously.
Just through that lens, yeah, they do. Especially Mike Zimmer's been a great defensive mind wherever he's gone. Dallas, Cincinnati, and now certainly in Minnesota as he finally got a head coaching spot. But one of the things that makes me laugh, and we'll talk about the Canucks later, is how these legacies often stick to players. And yes, there are guys who shake them. And I say that for the Canucks in reference to Erica Branson, third overall pick, has the physical tools, but has never really shown it in the pros. Case Keenum, a quarterback. So, I mean, yes, we've seen a Kurt Warner go from, you know, street free agent to being a Hall of Famer. And Case Keenum's been given every opportunity to fail, and he hasn't. And a guy who was a journeyman around the NFL everywhere else, you know, he, at some point, you have to let that tag go and consider that he could win some playoff games for them.
Yeah, you know, and I think just the way this season has unfolded has been perfect for him because they've had, I mean, the one constant with Mini is that defense. Second rated in the NFL. Really, the only team that you can compare it to is Jacksonville, but they're second in points allowed, second in yards allowed. So, I mean, that they get that every week. And I think so. Keenum starts as a game manager. Just go in. Don't screw it up, kid. You know, hand the ball off, throw checkdowns. Just don't do anything crazy. But as the season has unfolded, now he's surrounded himself with some weapons. Like Adam Thielen, it might be the best receiver in the NFL this year. It's crazy. You know, talking about a kid who's like came from out of nowhere. They've got three good running backs. They've got a weapon at tight end in Kyle Rudolph, and Stephon Diggs, their secondary receiver, could be a primary on a lot of teams. So it's all there. You add that, and then you've got, look at that defense with three or four Pro Bowlers on it. There's not a lot of holes on that team, but you can say the same thing about the Rams. So I guess the question then becomes, you know, like what quarterback is going to step up and lead his team through the playoffs?
Well, and that's probably the game of the week for me is, you know, we've got a rematch from a couple of weeks ago, Atlanta at New Orleans. And, you know, Atlanta's one of those teams that even though their record wasn't terrible when they started the season, they looked like they had a Super Bowl hangover, but they really seemed to have put it together. You had seen Atlanta last year in the playoffs. Yeah. Of course, we know what happened in the Super Bowl. That's a huge game because that conference or that division, the NFC South, three legitimate contenders because Carolina, who had the off year last year, they've looked like they could get back too. I know Mini is good, and we talk about the Rams being young, and there's sort of a wait and see. But how about those three teams? Any of those three get to the back to the Super Bowl?
I just kind of like the way Carolina has gone about their business this year, and Cam Newton is back to where he was as an MVP, and he is just such a unique weapon. And it seems to have, you know, a little more confidence in the downfield passing game.
Maturity too.
There's that too. You know, they've got a running game. And he's a pivotal part of that. Defense isn't quite what it was, in the Super Bowl year, but it's plenty good enough. I was just going to say the other one, you know, The other game I'm going to be watching is that Tennessee-LA matchup because I've loved Tennessee all year. They're one of those 8-16. There's a cluster of teams around 8-6. And, you know, one or two of them are going to break, you know, win their last couple of games and go into the playoffs with some serious momentum. And I still like Tennessee in the way they're made up.
Absolutely. And we've talked a lot about the NFC because it is there's just better storylines there. But to touch on the AFC briefly, it reminded me – the game between New England and Pittsburgh, it reminded me a little bit of last season where the playoffs were god awful, and then there was this amazing comeback in the Super Bowl that kind of papered over the cracks. And will you talk about Trump or the protests or ratings are down for the NFL? Part of the reason is bad football. And the playoffs last year, there was one game, I think it was the Green Bay game, that was actually interesting and notable. That game between Pittsburgh and New England kind of had it all. And as much as I hate New England, I despise the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I was thrilled to see them get screwed on one of these ridiculous, was it a catch? Wasn't a catch. Didn't complete the action. But what the hell is it going to take to kill the Patriots, Ed? They just, I mean, even the Steelers, as good as the Steelers has been with all their talent, what are they now? I think Roethlisberger is 10 or 3-10 against Brady and the Patriots?
Yeah, it's like holy water in a silver bullet. I don't know. I thought, you know that Miami, that was a Monday night game where they lost to Miami and they looked so bad.
Oh, that's it. They've hit the wall.
That's it. It's going to happen. It's going to got a 40-year-old quarterback. I don't know the names of any of their other players. This has got to be, except Rob Gronkowski. I've run out trying to judge or trying to assess or analyze New England, because it just seems like Belichick gives them a factor no other team in the NFL has. Is that worth 14 points? Is it worth 10 points? It seems like that's what it is. That would be, I don't know if there's a metric. There's some egghead who really should study that. Just try and figure out what it's worth to have Bill Belichick as your head coach, because that's something I'd be interested in.
So one of my favorite stories of the season just came out this week, and I guess if there is any hope for people who hate the Patriots, it's this story that Tom Brady has this health guru, this life coach, who is everything from the kind of egg whites he eats to what time he goes to sleep every day and all this stuff. And Brady started bringing him on the sidelines, and this guy is at odds with Belichick, and now they're fighting with each other, and he's been banned from the sidelines. Yeah. And so people, could this create enough discord to throw the Patriots off?
Yeah, no, I know. And it was a great story. It's funny because, like, they are so, it's such an anal organization, and they're so tight, and you don't really see.
They want to control that message.
100%. Well, it was like the story, like, when Deflategate broke, and the story of Belichick's fixer emerge, you know, that guy who's kind of in charge of, like, scouting the other teams, and he's basically Belichick's signal stealer, is what he is. So it's just
wonder what that pays. Is that a new business card?
Well, he was like, and he was, I want to say he was a retired army guy, or he was something like that. But it's like a Le Carre novel around this. It's this, like, murky, you know, dark world where all these, like, cagey operatives, and you don't know really where their allegiances lie. Is it with Brady? Is it with Belichick? And then come Sunday, they're magnificent. So we'll say, I just don't see it this year. I just think they've lost too many good players.
So the last line on the NFL before we move on the Canucks and hockey is Jacksonville. You know, is this, and again, people cannot, like Case Keenum, they look at Blake Bortles all the time and go, no, they cannot win with that, but they keep proving people wrong. Young, aggressive, full of confidence. Their defense in particular is ferocious. Of course, they have a former, they have lots of connections to teams that have done well in the playoffs before, in particular the coaching staff. So there's some experience to guide them there, but man, Jacksonville, like the Rams in the NFC, they're one of those great stories where you want to see the progress.
Yeah, well, Minnesota South, I think you can draw a direct, you know, comparison, and Bortles equals Keenum, and he's had two good games in a row now where he just didn't, he wasn't sent out as a manager, but, you know, big plays downfield in the passing game, and they don't need a lot out of him, but if they can just get enough with that defense and then the running game with the rookie Fournette and all the other weapons they have, that might be just enough. And again, in an AFC where you've got New England and then Pittsburgh and not much of anything else, unless you believe Kansas City just had that, you know, kind of inexplicable midseason slump and they're back to where they should have been all along.
Yeah, I that's what I like about these playoffs, is we've got a bit of a changing of the guard, some of the younger teams to watch, but also the established teams that you love to hate, like the Patriots and Steelers. So let's move on. Ed, first of all, thank you to Lazy Boy once again. Check out their flagship store at United Boulevard in Coquitlam. They also have locations in Richmond, North Van, and Maple Ridge. Great furniture. Go to lazynfl.com. Check some of the stuff out locally. Really good. Go there. Test it out, watch a game. They have the games on in the store. So if you're watching football, and there's lots of it, because there's some on Christmas Day, there's Christmas Eve, there's Saturday games. Love the Saturday games in the NFL this time of year. So let's move on to hockey quickly, Ed. Vancouver Canucks. I don't know what to say about Brock Besser because he does keep scoring goals. But I mentioned to someone yesterday there was this, all this angst over him taking the shot off the foot. And, oh, my God, the hockey gods hate the Canucks. This is a conspiracy from the NHL. What, the refs were instructed not to blow the whistle while this guy pulled himself across the, like, it's forgotten. Like, 2 days later, this catastrophic injury is gone, and he's scored two goals since then. And people are just like, oh, okay, like, we won't talk about that anymore. How remarkable is what this kid has done so far this year?
Well, yeah, quite.
It's like, in all your years covering the Canucks.
No, but let's go back to the start of the season, and then the narrative we were espousing was wins and losses really aren't all that important for this team. What people want to see is the development of the young players, improvement there, and some hope in the future is getting better. Well, out of the blue, basically baby Jesus has been dropped in their lap. And we've talked about this, I know, ad nauseum, but at the start of the year, if you would have thought Besser would have scored 15 goals, 17 goals, that's a great rookie year, unbelievable. Well, the kid might score 40. And he has established himself as maybe one of the 10 best goal scorers in the NHL right now. And with his skill set, I don't see that diminishing over time because he's got things you just can't teach. So there's one. There are a couple of other things that have taken place. Jake Virtanen had a monster game against San Jose. Now, if he turns a corner, and let's say he finishes with 15 goals, there's another piece. You've got other players on the Canucks. You've got Troy Stetcher. You've got Horvat coming back, and let's see what he does. And then there's all the players coming back. So, I again, coming back to the start of the season, if what you wanted from the Canucks were some signs that things were going to get better and younger players were developing, I think you're getting that.
So I'm going to mix my metaphors here again. Apples and oranges, yeah, well, dogs and cats living together and everything else.
That's okay.
As a tortured Cincinnati Bengals fan, that era in 1988 when they, you know, got to the Super Bowl and lost to Montana, they had this young phenom at running back called Icky Woods. And as a young lad, not that young, but young enough, watching the Bengals play, I wanted Icky to score every single game to see the dance. Not that Brock Besser dances because completely different personality, but it, for Canuck fans, it's giving them that lightning rod every game, a reason to watch to see what this kid can do. And regardless of their development over the last 3-4 years, this is what they've been missing, isn't it? A guy that gives you a reason to watch every game to see what happens.
Takes so much pressure off the organization and places it squarely on him, unfortunately. And my one kind of fear about him is he's going to get spooked this year because of all the attention, because he is really the only, I'm sorry, not the only, but he is really the feel-good story in this franchise now. But, you know, they're doing a good job, and he seems to have the personality to it. He's so even keel. He's not dull. Like, he's a funny kid, and I'm, you know, so glad I had that exchange with him about his addiction to Xbox, because it, you know, maybe not like a wild personality, but, you know, there is a bit, you know, there's a sense of humor there, and but more importantly, there's a groundedness there.
You know, if you haven't read it, Ed did this great piece for us today. It's online at theprovince.com, or you can pick up a copy of Thursday's Province if you want to go old school. But he asked Canuck players about their favorite Christmas presents, and the Xbox 360 and NHL 12, not like NHL 94, NHL 12 was Besser's favorite Christmas gift ever. Now, Ed, what's really struck me about that story, though, and I think it says a lot about the elite athlete and where their mind is, he talks about how out of hundreds of thousands of players, he was ranked, what, 12th in the world?
No, he was ranked 120. Thatcher Demko was ranked 9.
Okay.
But he beat the third-ranked player, but it was the way he had the list. And he challenged all the, it sounded like he challenged all the top 10 guys. The third guy took him up and he beat him, and he made it very clear that that had happened. So is it
reading too much into it to say that that's the kind of sort of a drive that someone has even as a kid?
I think it's part of the composite. I think you can look at that. Look at his work habits, look at the kind of player he is, and I think you're starting to get a picture emerging. And then, you know, especially with his backstory, you know, he's had a couple of personal hurdles here, lost a very close friend in a car accident, serious illness with his father. So, like I said, you know, a kid that's grounded, a kid who I think, for me, he plays the right way, but who also has like a sense of the bigger picture. And that's why I think what we're seeing here isn't a mirage where like everything is going right for him. Like there's going to be fluctuations in performance for sure, but he's got things that I think will stand the test of time.
So again, he's the difference in terms of why you might want to watch a game this year. But over the last 3-4 years when we've been doing this podcast, we've talked about how the goaltending has kept them in games, usually Ryan Miller or various other people that they've tried out in that position. So this was supposed to be the year they didn't want any part of re-signing Miller for good reason, basically to keep the fan base sane, if that's applicable anyway with this fan base. But this was supposed to be Markstrom's year to establish himself as the number one guy, and we'd seen things actually go pretty well. Now, the one half ice shot or center ice shot against Nilsson aside against the Predators, they've been leaking goals. There haven't been a lot of terrible, as you would term in soccer, howler goals, but they haven't been great in that either. Are you concerned that the Canucks are going to have to wait for Demko or another option to be their so-called guy they can lean on?
Goaltending is a funny one for me, and to me, it's still such a reflection of the team and the philosophy and the style they want to play. And I want to give Travis Green credit for continuing to play an aggressive up-tempo style because it's left the goaltending exposed and flailing for itself. And not only do they need good goaltending when they're playing this way, they need off-the-charts goaltending. They're not getting it. Yes, they are. There's a little unsettling tendency to allow one bad goal per game, which is really one of the measurements of your goaltending. I don't think you can really judge them until they get their team back to where they were and they get like the healthy pieces and they get Horvat and Tanev back in the lineup and they get some structure. Now, if they're still leaking goals, if they're still aligned, then you've got a problem. But I think right now I'm just willing to let this play out.
So they're still in the midst of this injury crisis, and I know there's a Christmas break here, and they're fortunate in that most of the games are at home, but they've got a little bit of a murderer's row coming up here where you've got St. Louis, then after Christmas you've got Chicago, LA, Anaheim, and then although there's not a ton of travel in January, it looks fairly light compared to some of the other months, you've still got a lot of teams in there that have are the top half of the NHL standings. Where do you think this team is going to be come the middle of January? Because you do worry about a young team psyche.
I think we're headed for another lottery year.
You wrote about this a couple of weeks ago about how familiarly in January this team has melted down. You see that again.
Yeah, and it just started because of the injuries basically a month earlier this season. But I don't necessarily view that as a bad thing either. I see them 24th, 25th at the end of the season, probably 12th or 13th in the West. Again, if we go back to what the expectations were and what the best possible case scenario were for this team, that kind of fits the narrative. If they come out of this with Brock Besser winning the Calder, scoring 38 goals, if they get Virtanen to 15 goals, if they can get one of those defensemen, I don't care if it's Hutton or Stetcher or whoever it is, and I'm just afraid it's going to be Alex Biega, who I love, but that's not what they need. That's not what they need. Then I think you can term this season a success. And if they do get, you know, a top five pick, and God forbid, if they do get lucky and get that first overall pick, that accelerates things exponentially.
Yeah, you have to think the odds are going to be in Arizona's. Man, they are awful. No, they are
unbelievable.
Awful.
It really is. And this was the year.
And they keep collecting decent players who aren't exactly washing out. That they can't put it
together. No, this was the year they were going to be competitive. This, you know, they kind of tanked all along, and they brought in Hjalmarsson, and they went out and got a goalie. And then, you know, all their young players were supposed to be, you know, a year older. And then they added Keller, a rookie of the year candidate. And they are so by far the worst team in the NHL. And Buffalo is in that conversation too. And again, you look at the pieces Buffalo's
Edmonton's
assembled
not in the playoffs
over the
there, where the Canucks are as well. It shows how fragile it is.
True.
On that point though, when you talk about the importance of a coach who can hold it together, especially with young players, how good a job do you think Travis Green's done to this point, and how big a challenge is it for him to keep this team going through prolonged losing if we do see that?
Yeah, I would say pretty good. I would, if we asked me this December 1st, I would have said very good. Just really liked what he did with the team, with the structure, about the philosophy, about, you know, an identity. And then the injuries started to pile up, and now it's kind of on a game-to-game basis, you know. And I still think they're doing okay. Like, the two last games, like, as we're doing these podcasts, was a 7-5 Montreal loss to Montreal, and then the overtime loss to San Jose last night. I'm sorry, I've forgotten what day we had.
That was Thursday. We're at Friday today.
Thank you. Thank you. So Thursday night. But, you know, wide open, entertaining games, lots of goals. Canucks fans can't complain about the entertainment factor. And that's kind of the style he's been preaching all year. Play aggressive, play up tempo. Don't get crazy about it. And unfortunately, they just don't have the horses to play that way on a night-in, night-out basis over the course of about, you know, 4 weeks. So, again, well, let's just see when they get back, when they get their players back, and let's have this conversation again in first week in February.
Well, we probably will, and we've got many weeks to talk about or many podcasts in the meantime, but when you if you're following that train of thought that the team's going to kind of fall off the map a little bit and struggle, maybe that's a good thing, because yeah. I think if the team was in the mix for a playoff spot – maybe you don't see some real motivation at the trade deadline to move Vanek and Gudbranson. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to think that last year you look at Burrows and you look at Hansen. You've got two pretty big pieces here on expiring contracts. Vanek certainly showing that he could do a job for someone in the playoffs, and he's obviously playing for a contract. And Gudbranson, again, people are in love with his junior history, perhaps, that's and his draft position that's still out there that's tantalizing to some old-school hockey guys. Do you think there's a chance we'll see a good deal of movement leading up to the trade deadline for the Canucks? And I guess that does depend on how they play.
The short answer is yes. I would be shocked if Eric Gudbranson is a Canuck beyond the trade deadline. There's just too much noise about him being shopped already, about Benning looking for a top nine forward. And he just, Eric is a wonderful guy. He's great in the room. There isn't a game I'm familiar with it where 6'5", 230-pound defenseman with the physical edge is not a valuable asset, but he's just not worth what he will get in the open market for this team right now. So for me, they've got to move him, and the more assets they can get, the better. And again, what's Vanek going to be going forward? He's not going to be part of the solution. They've got Gagne signed for 2 more years after this one. They've got Delzato. I'm not sure how much longer he's signed for. So they're going to be back. I think they have to kind of, you know, again, you know, it's so hard to tell with this organization. But I agree with you. I think they crossed the Rubicon at last year's trade deadline when they moved the veterans and got some good assets back. And I see them doing the same thing again.
You just look at the difference in situations with the contract they signed Erickson to versus, yeah. And I know different players, different reputations, but Vanek.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got an asset here who's motivated to really play well to make more money.
Yep.
Off you go, and you have. I mean, they may not make a deal in the end of the, at the end of the day, but what's their chances of moving Erickson, who I think everyone views as, even if he has a good little stretch here and there, everyone looks at that contract as an albatross.
No, there's no way. But you know, and what Vanek offers is that, you know, that ability to produce instant offense, and that's a very valuable commodity to have heading into the playoffs, especially for a really good team where he isn't going to, you know, it's not like you're you know, expecting him to play like 15, 16, 17 minutes in a top six role. No, you're going to, you know, feed him in a game where you need a goal or in that spot, because he can create offense out of nowhere. That game against Montreal, he scores 3 goals, and you didn't kind of notice him until the puck was on his stick and it was in the net. And that's what he gives, and that's what he'll provide, and that's why I think he'll be a fairly valuable asset at the trade deadline.
All right, as we get up to as we get close to wrap up this last podcast of 2017, any last thoughts on your mind, Ed?
No, I just, I think for me, it's funny. Like, I've always kind of been a World Junior fan, but I've gone through waves, because, like, I go back to the very first year of the national team in 1982, which was my second year in Medicine Hat, and Canada, you know, wins the first year where they have the national junior team, the program of excellence in place. So, I mean, I was, you know, I followed it. I was so close to it there for another 15 years, and then TSN took over, and the hard sell kind of, and the way they wrap themselves in the Canadian flag left me a little cold. But anyway, so long story short, this year with the Canucks prospects, I am so looking forward to seeing Pettersson on the big stage, looking forward to seeing Ylevi, looking forward to seeing Will Lockwood, and I hope his injury isn't serious and he is able to play. And then the Gajewicz kid who's playing for Canada, who's funny, of all the prospects they have. He might have been the one flying under the radar the most, but here he is playing on Team Canada, and that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's it has become a tradition. I have to admit that I was a little turned off by it for a long time, but I think, you know, once it starts, it's got a little bit of that Olympic feel to it, and especially since we're not going to have a proper team in the Olympics this year, gives you some real hockey to go after. So, Ed, thank you for this. Thank you for all your contributions this year. All the best to you and your family.
Yeah, best to everyone out there.
Yeah,
best of the season, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks to you guys for listening. We will endeavor to do these weekly on a regular basis. During the upcoming year. But thanks for your patronage, and keep listening. Lots of great stuff on the website through the holidays. Happy holidays, everyone.